Welcome to Nicosia Uncut, produced and presented by Andromagis Sophocleous and Kemal Baykali.
In the face of the regional developments and crises and wars, we discuss the possibility of a breakthrough in the Cyprus talks.
Don't get your hopes up. We are kind of pessimistic. We also discuss domestic politics and all kinds of failed states.
Welcome to Nicosia Uncut. Hello, Andromahi.
Hello, Kemal.
It's good to be back, and things have been piled up. And I think, us being a Cyprus Problem and Cyprus Politics podcast, we have attempted a lot to discuss the possibility of Cypriot sides together. And each and every time, the developments have proven us to think again, to think twice. We are recording this episode in the first week of October, and at the time when things are getting more sensitive and more fragile in Middle East, the tension between Israel and Iran, the tension between all the regional players are getting more in front of all other developments. So how realistic it is to wait some sort of an opening, some sort of a progress or a development on the Cyprus problem?
Sometimes, especially when covering the Cyprus problem, you need to always take a step back when looking at things, because sometimes expectation or hope or desire could cloud things into seeing possible developments or possible movements or possible openings, while realities on the ground are not there or don't point to that. With the Cyprus problem, it has kind of been like this for the past few months, I would say. And now that the trilateral meeting is announced, it seems like all the sides, except Greece, made sure that this is kind of underplayed, presented as informal. Well, in fact, the Republic of Cyprus and the Greek Cypriot side is tried to present it as some sort of a success, while the Turkish Cypriot side is presenting it as some just an informal dinner, let's say. But we know, or I'm in a position to know, that the Greek Cypriot side is kind of leaking that they don't expect much, that it's going to be kind of an informal thing itself. So they are also basically leaking what Tsatsaris is saying out in the open.
Kind of dropping the expectations. And although initially they were presenting it as a success story, now they are trying to calm down the expectations on that. And why is it?
For once, I think we had the fiasco of August, when it was the whole discussion about the trilateral meeting taking place, Greek Cypriot side announcing it, and announcing it in a very pompous way. They kind of tried to say, oh, we are the winners, or we've been trying for so long and we managed to achieve it, which was not very intuitive when it comes to the present setting and when it comes to who is opposite the Greek Cypriot side, opposite on the negotiating table, I mean. But back in August, things were pretty hyped. And back then, I remember many press coverages in the newspapers writing extensively about this possible paper that will be presented to the side. Apparently, there was talk about Olgin, whose mandate seems to have ended. It ended, the six-month period ended, but it appears that maybe some things are still taking place behind the scenes. So the talk back in August was that Mrs. Olgin had prepared this paper of the way forward for the sides. I understand that that paper was outlining steps in the way forward. I understand that it included clauses about non-commitment to the process, clauses about the process failing, etc. So that was kind of a detailed paper prepared by Mrs. Olgin. The question now is, first of all, whether the UN Secretary General has embraced the report of Mrs. Holguin. So we don't even know that, because there has been no public indication on behalf of the UN Secretary General when it comes to what Mrs. Holguin reported after her mandate ended. And of course, the United Nations Secretary General, one could say that, well, he proceeded to arrange this trilateral meeting, so maybe there is something there. Of course, a cynic could tell you, maybe the United Nations Secretary General wants to show some things happening at the same time. You know, we are discussing all this, so we don't know, first of all, if Mr. Guterres embraced it. We don't know if he's going to present anything to the leaders. Back then, I remember there was a discussion about starting from governance and power sharing and security issues and troops. So we don't know what the intention is behind this meeting. We don't know whether expectations are high. But what we know is that this meeting is coming in the midst of a war, and many more things.
Yes, Cypriots have been posting on social media the videos that they've been recording, because they've been watching from a distance the lights, the missiles, and hopefully, I say hopefully, they were reminded how close we are to the region, because occasionally we think that we are somewhere else, I don't know, next to Switzerland or something, and we are literally very close to the crisis region. And on that note, of course, Cyprus and the British bases have been also on the front pages in social media, especially in Turkish Twitter. They realize that Cyprus has actually been actively taking part in evacuations, but also in supporting the UK and the US, French, and, you know, the NATO partners in that development. How does this affect the role of Cyprus in the West? We know that there is also a talk of Cyprus having excellent relations with the United States, and Turkey has not been enjoying this photo of them hugging each other and talking about excellent relations. So how do you see Cyprus playing this role?
I think the talk is right. We do see this. We do see unprecedentedly close relations between Cyprus and the USA. And, you know, this thing has been going a few years back, when the US finally decided to kind of get Cyprus out of Russia's hands. And I think things had been set in place before, but I think that the Russian invasion in Ukraine speeded things up. There is a lot of work being done between Cyprus and the USA when it comes to things that have to do with anti-money laundering practices. There is a lot of scrutiny. The FBI, a section of the FBI, they were in Cyprus just a few weeks back. So they keep visiting. Mr. Christodoulidis, the president, has been very keen and very eager to work with the US. And we see this. We see this in practice. And we see that the US is very much enjoying this. We saw Cyprus going along with the Amalthea initiative, which was basically pushed by the US, even though it evidently failed in the end. But we do see Cyprus kind of being clearly on the side of the US in everything that is happening. And we also saw the continuation of the lifting of the arms embargo. We saw that a few weeks ago again in September. Obviously, as you said, this is not it does not please Turkey. At the same time, this close collaboration, it extends on a number of other issues as well. But, and that's the big but, for anyone who believes or believed that there needs to be a push by international powers at the moment when it comes to the Cyprus problem, otherwise things are not going to be able to be speeded up. And for those who were hopeful that maybe the close relationship between the US and Cyprus would act as an incentive for President Christodoulidis to be more proactive in the Cyprus problem, we have not seen that. I need to stress here that the US was very vocal when it came to a discussion that was taking place in the country when it comes to the electricity interconnection, in a kind of unprecedented intervention in the midst of negotiations. We saw the US ambassador basically saying three times that Cyprus should proceed with the electricity interconnection. And she was saying it without Cyprus even having a basic cost-benefit report on the project. So when it comes to the electricity interconnection, they put pressure and they put public pressure. When it comes to the Cyprus problem, we have not seen any such pressure.
Can we open a bracket here? And maybe very briefly, can you explain what the situation, what the problem is at the electricity interconnector, especially between Greece and the Republic of Cyprus? And where are we now on that?
Oh, that project is a mess. I think it's a case of the epitome of dodgy dealings and chronic capitalism and the issue of the Great Sea Interconnector. So the electricity interconnection is basically the interconnection between Cyprus and Crete. At this stage, this is the part that we are talking about. So just to give a bit of an outline, this idea started more than 10, 15 years ago, started as the idea of the Eurasia interconnector that would be connecting Cyprus to Crete, Crete to Athens. And there was also a leg to the issue always saying that at some point maybe it would also connect Cyprus to Israel. So that started many years ago. It was a project by a project promoter that had absolutely no experience in these projects. Project promoter who for years was failing to gather an investment in the project. And for some reason, the Republic of Cyprus and the Anastasiadis government back then was very eager and very keen to promote the project, to the extent that not only did they not do anything else when it comes to Cyprus energy security and when it comes to making Cyprus more autonomous when it comes to electricity, they also spent a lot of political capital in pushing for Brussels and the EU to fund the project and to become part of the project. In the meantime, at some point, Greece decided to opt out of the Athens connection. They said that they wanted to take up the project themselves, and they established another company, state company mostly, to take over the project, the Crete Athens part of the project. That company also has Chinese interests in, by the way. And after Greece opted out of that part of the project, Cyprus was left pushing for the EU to fund the project. And they spend a lot of political capital, the Anastasiadis government, in pushing for this. And in a surprise move, they in fact made it, and they got 657 million funding from the Connecting Europe Facility for the project. And after the EU got involved, well, the EU then realized that the project promoter could not complete the project because they didn't have the expertise, they didn't have the knowledge. And what did the EU do back then? They pushed Greece to join for the company, as it had taken up the Crete-Athens connection, to also take up the Crete-Cyprus connection. And we pushed for this as well because we would be left stranded because we had done nothing about Cyprus energy security. And after Greece and ADMIE joined the project, well, they were very, very pushy when it comes to the financial aspects of the deal. And they were very pushy. And for a very long time, Cyprus did not even have a cost-benefit analysis of the issue. And the negotiations were taking place. In the midst of the negotiations, that was when the US had intervened multiple times. But in the end, it seems like things are moving. And it seems like there was a high-level agreement that we are proceeding with the project and things are proceeding. And Cyprus has agreed to give 125 million euros in the first 5 years before the interconnection will be live. And it seems that all this pressure has paid off. And at the same time, just to mention here that one of the thorny aspects of the negotiations had been the fact that Greece wanted Cyprus and the Cyprus Energy Regulatory Authority to commit itself to paying for the project if the project could not be completed due to geopolitical reasons. Hint, 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 meaning Turkey.
Yes, but you know, all this thing shows us. Now we have the Americans telling Cypriots what to do in energy. And we have Americans managing the operations from Cyprus. We have Americans talking about their military presence in Cyprus. And Americans are not these days talking effectively about the Cyprus problem solution. So this is one aspect. And the other aspect is that, again, because of the distraction in the area, the role Turkey would probably be wanting to play will also be coming into discussion again. And Turkey will probably try to benefit from this in a way that will bring some political advantages. And seeing Cyprus being used by Americans, by Brits, and Turkey thinks probably that they've been controlling the northern part of the island for almost half a century, and nobody's actually actively telling them to leave. And probably they would think, why should we be taking steps that will rid us from our control on this part of the island? So the only player that's actually pushing for it looks like Greece, because Greece is trying to mend its relations with Turkey in a strategy that has long-term aims. And I think they also realize that without Cyprus, no Turkish-Greek relationship will be fixed. How do you see this context of Turkey trying to increase its profile? And how do you see Greece trying to be convincing Turkey for a more constructive approach in the solution of the Cyprus problem?
Well, that is the million-dollar question at the moment, it should be told. As you said, it is evident that Greece is the player that wants it more at the moment. It is the player that is pushing. Mitsotakis knows very well that he's being pushed internally in his party not to proceed with the rapprochement with Turkey, but he's pushing for it, and he's very keen in pushing for it, and he has kind of hushed his opponents in doing so. But he knows very well that Cyprus and the nationalist circles around him, but also in Cyprus, will be very eager to kind of sabotage this rapprochement, or they don't see this rapprochement positively, or they are very reluctant in the face of this rapprochement, or they are hesitant or skeptical towards Turkey's intentions. So there is a lot of lack of confidence there. But Mitsotakis is still pushing for the amelioration of relations with Turkey, and they are doing it on a number of issues. And now they are even openly discussing taking their issues to Hague and the issues that they have when it comes to the continental shelf and the exclusive economic zones of the two countries. But Mitsotakis knows very well that if anything would erupt in Cyprus, things could blow up. And things could blow up for his attempt with Turkey, but things could also blow up for him internally, because there are people waiting for him in the corner. There are people that are waiting for this rapprochement to fail in order to be able to say, we told you so, you sold us. So this is the picture there. Having said that, though, and I think we need to put this in the picture, Turkey has not stopped what it is doing in Cyprus. On the contrary, whilst we see this amelioration of relations with Greece, we still see Turkey increasing its stronghold in the north. We still see the Turkish Cypriots being increasingly silenced. We still see Mr. Tatar being adamant against the Bicommunal Federation. We still see the new Turkish ambassador in the north being a person with specific interests in the north and with a very close relations to the Erdogan's party. So we see the attempt to keep a stronghold there. This is why, strategically speaking, one would say that the Greek Cypriot side could make a move that would strategically force Turkey to basically open its cards. Because at the moment, we have this amelioration of relations, we have the increasing height hold over the Turkish Cypriots by Turkey, so kind of contradicting things, which proves that Turkey wants to have the two issues completely aside. And that's where the Greek Cypriot initiatives come in, because that's where the Greek Cypriots could find an area in which they could make a move or some moves that would remove the carpet under the legs of both Tatar and potentially even Turkey, that is kind of sitting comfortably back at the lack of any movement in the country while it basically colonizes the north to a point of no return. So,
and I don't see such a move from the Republic of Cyprus. I mean, instead, quite the contrary. I see the arrest warrants against those who've been holding Greek Cypriot properties in the north. We know that, you know, property issue has always been one of the discussion topics in the Cyprus talks. And the so-called 14 points of confidence building measures, nobody's talking about such things. Nobody's talking about opening new crossing points. Nobody's talking about appointing Turkish Cypriot officers in the government offices in the Republic of Cyprus controlled area. I mean, it's completely forgotten, this kind of thing. And apart from that, you know, you're right. Turkey is actually increasing its control in the north and continue to interfere in the Turkish Cypriot politics to an extent that the Turkish Cypriot opposition has almost lost all its motivation and hope and its ability to resist it, as there is no... I think their only hope is the upcoming leadership presidential elections in the north, and probably they will try to see... When I say they, let's give a name. I think it's Tufan Erhürman, leader of CHP, who would be now seeing fit for the job. And I think they are being very careful not to piss Turkey off. But again, Turkey is trying to play a bigger role now these days. You know, probably it will increase its control in Syria. On one hand, they were trying to fix their relations with Syria. And I don't know how this will be playing at. Their relations with Israel is all-time low, but we all know that in a month's time, things can change. So it all depends how the regional developments will evolve. But I agree with your analysis on Greece, and I believe that Mitsotakis is personally putting a lot of, let's say, a political capital in it. And he wouldn't like to be losing this. Not only against the other political parties, but also within his own party. There are those who are waiting for him to fail. So I don't know how this will be shaping up. We have an upcoming, let's say, dinner. And I don't know what the roadmap out of this. I don't know what role the United Nations will play, whether they have... the motivation to do so now that the UN Secretary General was announced persona non grata in Israel. So, you know, I mean, whether the UN is prepared also to put some capital into it, but the UN capital is not enough. We need the big players. We know that in the summertime, we have been hearing the UK has been playing a role. We have been hearing Americans have been playing the Germans somehow. But I don't know whether they will be interested to sit down with Turkey and then, you know, try to convince Turkey into some sort of an opening towards a solution.
I think the diplomatic pressure continues behind the scenes to create this setting in which you would create an incentive for Turkey to even proceed to discussing something that will be somehow within the framework. And the thing here, though, is Turkey has still not shown that it has got to where it wants when it comes to engaging with the issue. And my question here is whether we are preparing to kind of get into a situation in which you would have Turkey saying, oh, come on, okay, look at how adamant Ersin Tatar is. Let us wait for October 2025 when a new leader will be elected in the Turkish Cypriot community and we take it from there. And I think, as you said before, Tufan Erhürman, he's kind of preparing himself for this. And I would just like to add something here because when you were talking about Tufan Erhürman, I was thinking how you had a parallel visit in New York by both Ersin Tatar and Tufan Erhürman. And it's kind of the opposing forces, not that opposing because things are, like you said, but you know, the vision for the federation contrasted to the vision of a two-state solution? And where is the Greek Cypriot side in this? Where is it trying to do something to help one side rather than the other? Politically speaking, when you look at this chess game that is going on in the north, you would expect the Republic of Cyprus and the Greek Cypriot community to have some sort of, to attempt to kind of shake things up a bit and even kind of support or enhance that power that is in favor of a federation.
I will ask you a counter question. Who is with Christodoulidis? Who is behind him? Who is supporting him? Is there some sort of a brains coming together? And, you know, supposedly he was going to form some consultation committee, this and that we've been hearing. There was one. But, you know, number one question, his popularity apparently is diminishing. And number two question, does he have people support him in this? Like, is he just alone in this? Do you have like intellectuals, thinking heads, party officials supporting him? How do you see his position in the Greek Cypriot politics?
Look, I think things are clearly not going well for him politically. But I am a bit cautious against thinking at high-level politics and thinking that this is what determines people's stance. And when it comes to high-level politics, things are clearly problematic for him. But Christodoulidis has been very, very cleverly focusing on this contact with the people. He's everywhere. He goes to every random sort of occurrence or event. He's trying to play, I think, with the disillusionment of people with politics. So you can see that at high-level politics, he's not particularly favored. But who really cares about high-level politics in this country? Like, and that's a genuine question that I get to ask myself every day. And when I look at what Christodoulidis is doing, and when I hear about the way he's being received at all the events that he's going, makes me take a step back when it comes to thinking that his popularity is like falling. Mm-hmm. However, politically speaking, these events and these meetings, they cannot sustain him. When things are going to become so bad or when a crisis might hit, you need a leader. And the country just went through a major kind of institutional crisis with the decision to fire the Auditor General by the Supreme Constitutional Court. And Christodoulidis was absent. He chose to be absent at a time when people were so angry and there was this contrast and conflict between the institutions. And he chose to be totally non-involved in it.
Potato was too hot to handle, Andromache.
It was. But this is not what you need when a country is going through a crisis. And okay, that crisis was contained. But I mean, so many things are happening. And Christodoulidis chooses to kind of stay back as though he would harm his political capital. So in my personal assessment is that had he been more strategic in his approach and eager to shake things up, I think that the only thing that could really, really change things would be a Cyprus problem solution or a Cyprus problem movement, a genuine movement in this, not random dinners or meetings that might just end up in a three-phrase a statement by the UN, you know, something real to happen, so things to be shaken up, because at present, nobody is interested in the Cyprus problem. He clearly lacks the support of the parties, of the political parties around him when it comes to making any move in the Cyprus problem. But at the same time, he's anyway lacking the support of the political parties around him. This alliance is very shaky and they are all kind of staying there for the merits that being in power gives you until things become so tight, especially with the Cyprus problem, that one of the powers will be forced to leave the government.
To summarize, the defense is taken care of by the Americans. The Cyprus problem is taken care of by the Greeks. The electricity is taken care by the others, by Europe. The internal matters taken care by the Constitutional Court. And I don't recall any initiative that he is leading other than trying to build good relations with the West and the Americans, and trying to keep a popular face among people. Economy is all right, okay, it could be better. But again, he's not being a leader, I mean, as simple as that. And he's not using his powers in a way that will convince people or the political parties that he is a leader to be trusted and respected. And I think political parties are anyway looking for an excuse to bury him because he is a nuisance to the existing power structure within the Greek Cypriot politics. Well, in the north, we know that everybody is now waiting for the elections. Tufan Erhürman will, of course, be running against Tatar, it seems so. I don't know if there will be any other power struggles coming within UBP. As far as I know, Harmanji is not really interested to challenge as a second opposition figure in the upcoming elections. So I think everybody is now trying to see what's going to happen in the area. They are also trying to see what Turkey will be doing and saying, in the north especially. And I think people are also expecting the coming elections in the north. And there are no expectations from Hristodoulidis. That's maybe a very general summary of the situation. And we are coming towards the end of 2024. And if there will be any kind of a movement in the Cyprus problem, if you ask me, it can only happen if there will be some sort of a calming down in the region of the situation. And if Turkey managed to get a very good deal in some other areas with the European Union, I don't know whether it's going to be visa relaxation, liberalization, whether it's going to be opening new chapters in the membership talks, whether it's going to be some sort of a, let's say, investment plan helping some money coming into the Turkish economy. And also maybe some sort of a defense deal that will help Turkish defense concerns to be met, as you and everybody knows very well, because of their initiative with the Russian S-400, the famous F-35 plans have been dumped. So whether Turkey will be able to design some kind of a deal that will include some sort of an opening in Cyprus or not, we will yet to see. But I think this is what Greece is now pushing. This is how I see the current situation, Andromache.
It's kind of stark how we are lacking in expectations, basically, or hope, because you need to keep your eyes on the ground and see how things are moving. And at this stage, really, you would require a kind of big international move for Cyprus, and I don't really like. I'm kind of ashamed to even mention it at this stage, and at this stage in which we are. And I said it before in this podcast, and I want to say it again: this constant discrediting of the United Nations, of the UN Secretary General himself, by Israel, and the way that they are talking about the UN and the Secretary General himself is something that will come back and haunt us. Because this kind of attempt to
discredit,
it's an attempt to discredit the person. But when you're discrediting the person, you're discrediting the organization. When you're discrediting the organization, you're discrediting basically the foundations of life after 1945. And when you're discrediting all this, you're discrediting the very existence the European Union,
the international law, the system, what kind of a leverage are you going to get to fix things up? Okay, maybe not fix, but at least to balance things up.
Yes, and I would want to see Cyprus being in a position to perceive this. This is going to come back and haunt us. And, you know, we are in Cyprus. We see the region in which we are. We see how things are constantly changing. No one can feel assured in this setting.
After 65 years, we are back to the two so-called motherlands trying to fix the Cyprus problem for us. So now we let Turkey and Greece solve it for us, the Cyprus problem. What happened? All this Cyprus-led, Cyprus-done, Cyprus-blah-blah project.
So it's kind of funny because I was thinking of this is also with the electricity interconnection, how it was this kind of motherland attempt. And I think that both sides are failing, you know, and I think that we see signs of a failed state in the Republic of Cyprus as well. Jokingly, well, the North is anyway a pseudo-state, as the Greek Cypriots are calling it, but it is a failed pseudo-state as well. So it's what I always say, but of course some call it a hopeful approach, that unless we stand together and stand together on our feet, we cannot kind of lead the way forward as an independent and strong European nation, because we will always be dependent on our motherlands. We are basically constantly reminded of this.
Motherlands in quotations, because Nikosia Ankat producers strongly believe that our motherland is Cyprus, of course. But yes, of course, I agree with you, and I think it's time to grow up. Yes, to grow up, which I am not sure whether it will be possible now that everybody is benefiting from status quo. And even the latest crisis, the constitutional crisis, if you ask me, had we have a proper constitution being functional with the Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots operating it, maybe things would have been different. It's just another symptom of how things are not necessarily functioning properly.
On this point, I was invited to discuss the issue of the Auditor General on a political TV show last week, and I was mentioning this. I mentioned exactly what you said, and what I said is that we are used to be discussing the Cyprus problem from the perspective of things that have to do with land, with property, with the occupation, but we don't discuss it through the light of its impact on the way our government is structured, its impact on the way our state is being run. And the case, for instance, with checks and balances, and there are absolutely no checks and balances in the constitution under the law of necessity, and we don't discuss this a lot. And I could go on discussing the North as well, how this lack of legalization and the international legalization has allowed basically a corrupt elite to be running the North as well. You see how we keep coming back to be haunted by the collapse of constitutional order back in 1963, but we don't put this in the discussion when we discuss the consequences of the lack of a Cyprus progress.
Andromache, I remember back in good old days, two young, excited activists holding a banner, division and corruption go hand in hand. And, I think those two people maybe have been giving the right message. I think that's a very summary of it. I think we now again find ourselves in the wait and see situation. And it's so sad that it's beyond our control. The Cyprus problem is not in our control. The regional developments, they are not in our control. And what we can do to make this place a better place for the younger generations to live in, this is not in our hands at the moment. But what's in our hands is basically to start talking reason as much as possible, how we see things should be and how things are at the moment. And I think we will continue to do so. We are not claiming that we are always the most reasonable people, but we will continue to ask questions.
Yes, it's been a pleasure, Kemal. I missed our discussion.
Me too.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.